Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 71. Our show is ready for Social Security. It's waited long enough. It's not retiring, though.
Well, you also know, though, that this is the first show that we've actually recorded for the year because we had a hell of a start to the
We're still not well.
We're in the regular fashion. Hey, everybody, it is time once again for the Shared Desk. I am your host, T. Morris.
There's the guardian I've been looking for.
I've been clucking in a lot of time with Dusty. It's felt really, really good. And across from me,
I'm Pip Ballantyne.
Which is your alien name, because you're an alien, which I think is very cool.
It is very cool.
I agree.
God, I love that episode. It's the episode of Supergirl with the crossover. But guess what? Someone in the studio hasn't seen that episode yet. I'm fangirling over.
Stop flapping your hands.
I am. Who are we talking to over here?
I am Lauren Scribe Harris.
I'm looking for a mind and a work, work. I'm looking for a mind and a work, work. I'm looking for a mind and a work, work.
We're going to get back to that.
They're just going to sing to each other now. I'm a terrible singer and I will refrain.
Say no to this.
No. Say no to this. No. We're going to get back to that.
Don't make me sing. I will open it up and then you'll all die.
So yeah, Lauren is joining us. Why is Lauren joining us, you wonder? It's because of Farpoint. Yes, Farpoint in beautiful Timonia, Maryland.
Which is our first event of the year because we
Your
were...
Your first event for the year. Our first joint event.
What was your event for the GM?
MAGFest, baby.
Oh, you went to MAGFest.
Yeah.
That's
not,
right.
I didn't just go to MAGFest.
I spoke at MAGFest.
In fact, that was sort of the interim podcast that we did because we
You and Nick.
Yeah, me and Nick. And we did a panel on storytelling in video games, and it was a lot of fun. It was me, Nick, and Robert Aldrich. You can listen to that show. That's episode 70. And then right in between, we did a special edition drop-in with the Geek Wolfpack podcast over at geekwolfpackpodcast.com.
And there was like a 6-second video in there somewhere.
It was a video of everyone doing the collab. So the thing at MAGFest was that people would walk around, and suddenly you hear this roar! And what that is apparently it's Colossus from the stand-up Midway video game X-Men versus Capcom, I think. Basically, you play X-Men, and you're going...
I always wanted to play
X-Men. Yeah, that was a fun one. So, we're going to Farpoint. Lauren, how did you become involved with Farpoint?
Well, the short version is that I know someone on the staff. The slightly longer version is that I made a friend on Tumblr, on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. section of Tumblr.
Nice.
And her girlfriend is one of the staff members of Farpoint Con, and we connected at Balticon last year, and I was like, hey! Well, and they were like, oh, okay, so you know T and Pip. We've been trying to get them back, and I was like, do you want their email?
We had talked about it for a while, but we were sort of like ships in the night.
You know what they call that?
Work!
That's what they call that. Yeah, you just got to do that. You just got to work. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to work on that. But I'm just going to have to make that go work, 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 or something like that. Anyway, yeah, this is a first. That was the first time someone has ever requested a specific moment for a drop-in. And now, Scribe
Harris. They're all going to be Hamilton from now on.
So, what are we talking about? This is kind of a terrible segue, but we're just going to jump into it. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about something that came up a lot. Actually, after MAGFest. So, in a weird way... Oh, first off, what are we drinking tonight? We are drinking Viking blood.
Not from our horn, though. We must take our horn with us to
smoke. Yes, we are going
to
take our horn with us. But
I bring mine as well?
Yes, you should bring your horn. Yeah. Everyone who's got a horn should bring a horn.
So, anyway...
If I got a horn, you got a horn.
We're all very horny.
Yeah, so Viking's blood, or excuse me, Viking...
Are you holding that towards me like you want me to fill it?
Viking blood,
I want you to hand it to T so that he can fill it, and then
you
I
guys
want
fill it
to hand it back to you, and then you hand it to me so I don't...
Go ahead and
him.
Look it up, it's called Viking blood. It's a kind of mead, and it's really good, and it's really high in ABV, so prepare yourself.
It's Nordic honey wine with hibiscus and hops added.
So last year at Smoky, T and I jointly won the Drinkin' Lincoln Award. Single-handedly because of Viking's blood.
That was last year.
Well,
yeah.
In my case, Viking's blood and blueberry moonshine. I am so sorry, Hugh O'Donnell. I drank all your blueberry muffin moonshine.
Oh, and he's not going to be there this year, so you can't buy him a new one.
I'll bring him one to Balticon.
That sounds like a good idea.
Well, actually,
this is 19% alcohol, just so you know.
Viking blood, yeah. Viking blood actually goes back even further at the very first Smoky Mountain Rider.
That's right,
yes.
Lauren and I somehow parked ourselves.
Who introduced us to Vikings? Was it you?
No, it was me. And what happened was, is we wound up killing the bottle, just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
We were drinking Viking blood back and forth, and we were really opening up to each other.
Because I had a really bad year, and I had quit my job.
Yeah.
That was the year I quit my job and decided to try part-time work in writing, and because I had been in a soul-sucking job that made me stop writing, and
you kind of
see
bad.
That's this is where I need to drop in. No, say no to this. So
you don't need to drop it; you just sing it.
There we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing was, you and I were just opening up and just chatting away.
We bonded.
We bonded hard, and then suddenly
I thought
just
that was with the chocolate martini that you greeted us.
Greet you with a chocolate martini. It was a caramel macchiato martini.
Delicious. But I remember we killed the bottle, and then we suddenly realized, and at one point you were like, why am I opening up to you, T? And I go, it's just my superpower. And we just kept going back and forth, back and forth. And suddenly,
that was the blood.
We killed the bottle, and then we looked around, and we were like, oh, everybody's in the hot tub. Let's go. Then we stood up, and we were like, well, that was a dumb thing to do. Poor life choice.
Many dumb things were done that time.
Many dumb things were done.
Immediately afterward, we got in the hot tub, and I lost my contact.
My left contact was gone for the entire...
And several people almost fell on their asses because of the ice.
Because it froze. That was the night that that we were in the hot tub, and our heads were wet, and our hair frosted.
Yep.
Not like the crappy 90s and early 2000s frosted tips, but I'm talking actual
frost.
Elsa, let it go.
And on top of all that, after we got out, we then read the safety manual, which said, don't consume alcohol for getting into this. If it's like 15 degrees like it was, don't get in and out.
Only stay in for 10 minutes.
We've been in there like two hours.
Don't dunk your head and lose a contact. Whoops.
Smoky Mountain Riders.
Can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah!
But we survived.
Yeah, we did survive. Uh-huh. So
those
on
poor
the way,
hot tubs went through a
on
lot.
On the way back from MAGFest, I'm chatting with Nick Kelly, as I do, and Nick suddenly turns to me and says, out of the blue, he goes, hey, T, what is this thing about the imposter syndrome? I don't know anything about this imposter syndrome, but I've seen all these people popping up all week talking about the imposter syndrome. What is this? This is totally alien to me. And we started talking about it, and I thought...
What did you explain to him? What did you say it was?
So what exactly is the imposter syndrome? That's what I think we're going to kick it off with right now. Exactly. What do we define as the imposter syndrome? And then after I'm done explaining it, I can let you ladies talk because then I can drink my blood. The whole thing about the imposter syndrome is that one day when you sit behind your computer and you suddenly believe you are not worthy. You are completely unworthy of writing anything. This is pretty much what it is.
It's a trap.
You just fall into it and you can't get out of it. And it sucks because suddenly you think you can't write a word to save your life. And even though we have proven a lot, all three of us have proven what we can do in anthologies, in our series, and in things like that, the imposter syndrome sneaks up on you. Mm-hmm. And that's what I described it as. Pip, what do you think it is?
I just think it's natural to have it. I wouldn't necessarily say I'd suffered from the imposter syndrome, but there is certainly a time in every writer's life where they're like, my writing sucks. Why am I doing this? I think that's my version of the imposter syndrome.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yosemite? Yeah.
I know the books of the Order. They all kick ass. They're all wonderful.
That's because I can reach you from here.
That's true.
But I think everybody has it, right? That moment where you read.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you're doing a first draft, it's especially easy to get. Oh, God.
Yeah.
When you go back and you read it and you're like, what have I written?
What has I written?
Well, and
H-A-Z. What has I written?
And I find especially when I am at a convention or when I'm around people that have gone a little farther than I have in the game, so to speak, I suddenly have this feeling of I'm never going to get there. I'm not worthy. I'm not. And that's, I think, really what it is the I am not worthy of
to be in this or the stratosphere
or the things I do are never going to be this good. And I think it's especially easy to fall into that when you are feeling blocked or when you are running into plot problems or when you're looking at this steaming pile of your first draft going, now what?
You see, I think it's because you don't know the rules of the game. I don't think you do.
When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die.
It's that simple.
There is no middle ground.
There is no middle ground. That's exactly what it is. You remember the words
Cersei
of Cersei.
Cersei is a very tough teacher, I guess.
She is
say.
Also a hell of an editor. Anyway, so... I mean, when
a lot of red pen.
A lot of red pen.
And, you know, I think it's also tough when you are... in the position that I'm in, where you're trying to get traditionally published, and you know your work is of a certain caliber that it could get there, but and yet you've gained no traction.
It can be very frustrating,
but it's also one of those things where you say, well, if that never happens, does that mean that I'm always going to be an imposter, that because I couldn't get past the traditional gatekeepers, that I've never really made it.
And this is where I find the imposter syndrome.
Because we've also met indie authors, some who are making large amounts of money. Larger than probably many traditionally published authors.
Yeah.
But they still want that validation.
Yeah.
They still want to get into the gate.
Well,
which is ridiculous.
I
think it's ridiculous.
I'd rather have the money.
To me, the validation is I'm writing, and people are paying me exorbitant amounts of money, and I do nothing else but write. And to me, I'm like, what more validation do you need? You are a full time writer. What were you going to add something to that, Scribby? Scribe? Scribby? I need more of this.
You do. Drink more tea.
It'll make
Talk
me feel better.
Less.
Drink more.
Okay. Oh, Smokey's going to be Hamilton theme.
I feel like. The subtitle of this show is going to be called The Hamilton Show.
I feel like there are going to be a couple of people at Smokey, specifically Alex and Gail, are going to just leave the room
time.
Here it goes. Goodbye.
They're just going to be like, oh, no. Because they were the ones that when everybody started singing Les Mis, and we had that huge chorus of Les Mis. You missed that. It was the year you weren't there, but we were all singing Do You Hear the People Sing?
Yes.
and they both just bolted. They were like, nope. And they left.
All we need to make it complete for Gail is to find if they have any Hamilton Funko Pops.
Oh, God.
Because she will lose her effing mind over the Funko Pops.
They should have Hamilton.
They should have Hamilton Funko Pops.
I don't know
Funko
if they
Pops.
Have them yet.
I will collect every one of those mothers. Every one of those.
Sala will have them first.
Yes, she will, because if she didn't, that would be, well, you know, it is pretty hard to do that. What? Yeah, so anyway, what I was going to say was, so you were talking about, though, the validation, and we were talking about...
Well, I think it also depends on what your goal is, and what is your goal, making tons of money with your writing, or is your goal, you know, making a certain, like, is your Katie and I have talked about this on our podcast some,
which
because,
is
our podcast is called Words of a Feather.
And where's that?
wordsofafeatherpodcast.com.
How about that?
Okay. Well done.
Thank you.
So
it's like you've been doing it a while.
Yeah. So we talked about, because both of us want to be traditionally published.
Sure.
Now neither of us okay. Both of us want to be hybrid authors.
Right.
Is the goal. Because yes, we would like the money that you get from retaining a majority of your rights and royalties.
Right.
But also there is you're eligible for certain awards and things as a traditionally published author.
Right.
That you are not as an indie author.
Right.
You're also it's easier to get in. Now, this may be changing with Ingram Spark and things like that, but it's easier to get into libraries.
That is true.
So Scribby is a librarian, right. And the book launch I'm doing later this year, we've been trying to figure out if I go through Ingram Spark, if she can get it into the libraries there, but we're not sure.
Well, I know the Create Space makes it possible for us to get in there.
It's supposed to have some library stream. It's supposed to.
And whether or not
she can't get it through there. And every library is different. That's the problem, is that a lot of public libraries, at least, they are county. There are county libraries. There are the state libraries. And
then there's the mothership.
Yes. Oh. So they all have different rules.
I know with the Library of Congress, you automatically get in. As soon as you get published, you're in. That, at least that's what I was told.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was told. If you're in North America and you get published.
Even immigrants like you.
Because
immigrants, we get the job done. Yep. But
nice
I
one.
I want that on a sticker.
I'm sure you can find it. I'm sure you can find it on a t-shirt.
Well, I know that at least through Kobo, because Kobo bought Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, if you go through Kobo somehow, I don't know how the audio part works that way, but... because Overdrive is, I believe, the library's version of an audiobook lender.
Interesting.
Of a digital audiobook lender.
But the thing about the imposter syndrome is that you suddenly feel crippled by this feeling that you don't deserve it. And here's the thing that I find interesting about, there are plenty of people that I have met in the years that I've been going from convention to convention. They should be feeling the imposter syndrome because they're one-trick ponies. Right. And I have met people that have been self-published and some people who have never been published, and I've read their stuff and I'm like, I got to ramp it up, because if I can't reach their level, I'm not good enough. And the imposter syndrome, I think, is it can happen for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. It could come from stress. It could come from having a rough go. I mean, as Pip can attest, I made some big choices in 2016. I am no longer agented. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm a free agent, or free of my agent, however you want to phrase it. And then on top of that, I'm still working on projects that I haven't finished yet.
Right.
Mm. But Smokey's going to cure that.
Well, yeah, I'm starting a new project, new genre, new. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all unproven ground.
That seems like ripe situation for the imposter syndrome.
It does.
Starting
yeah,
a new genre.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've been listening to audiobooks.
But you have been doing your research, so there should be no reason for you to feel like
that. And I think for me, part of the reason that I still look at traditional publishing, and that's still one of my goals, is that primarily my book consumption is still through traditional means.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't really search much through indie books. Or sites for that, and I listen to audiobooks through Audible, which, you know, you have the ACX, but being a podcaster, I also have a certain level of audio quality that I require, and a lot of the ACX produced books don't have that.
And the
except for ours, because I just finished Countess Hughes of Crimson.
Yes, and except for the ones
fine
that, obviously, except for the ones that I narrate.
Yeah, right.
We're
right.
All three of us narrate.
Yes.
Again, though, that's
should not
the
be
thing.
Impostering on that.
I don't think there's anything wrong about wanting traditional publishing.
No.
I mean, people are. There are some indie authors that are stunned that I want to have my next
it's
book.
It's nice
be,
to be able to walk into a bookshop and there's your
and
book.
And boom, there it is. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem playing ball with New York. They were great to us during. During the whole Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences time, they wanted to end the series early. We didn't. So we did, you know, we're working on book six and we're having a great time with it. And the other nice thing is that when you are doing things independently, you can do things like going ahead and produce your own audiobooks.
Right.
And that's been terrific too.
Mm-hmm.
But even when you go traditional, you can still get the rights to do it in audio. When we did Social Media for Writers,
we got the audio rights.
Right.
So I mean, and that was very worthwhile.
I think part of one of the things that is attractive still about traditional publishing is the especially considering marketing and things like that, is it is increasingly difficult to do an indie publication on a shoestring budget.
It is.
And so you have to have some form of capital, whether that is crowdfunded or whether that is money that you set aside in order to do a proper book launch and book marketing and things like that. And it's a time investment. It's a money investment to do this independently.
Yeah. I still think
you have to do that some traditionally as well. I know. But there's a lot of funding that you don't have to pay out of pocket initially.
You don't have to pay for covers or editors.
Yeah. There's some of that that you don't have to do with a traditional publication. And so a lot of that, if you don't have the money to invest in your independent publication, it's going to be a little bit harder to make it, you know, hit Hugh Howey sales.
Yeah. Now, what about you, Pip? You've been kind of the silent observer in all this, which makes me nervous because that usually means you're thinking of something. So what about you, or you're drinking, one or the other. What is your thoughts on the imposter syndrome? How does it hit you, as it were?
To me, a writer is a writer. It doesn't matter if you're a published writer or an unpublished writer, you're a writer. The only difference between a published writer and an unpublished writer to me is time and sticking with it. So as far as being an imposter writer, there is no imposter writer.
No. It's when you feel as if you are an imposter.
I never felt an imposter.
Well, there you go. So you're in the Nick Kelly camp.
Well, no, yeah. I felt like, I mean,
Nick Kelly said the exact same thing. He said, I've never felt that.
I've always written. So for me, it's not a matter of that. But I think the only time I've ever come close is when I'm blocked, when I'm stuck with a story, you know, where it's going or there's something not right with it. And then I'm like, eh.
Well, here's a question. Do you feel, are you a person who tends to feel unsure of yourself very much? Or are you more of a secure person? Because Christine Catherine Rush said something on the Creative Pen podcast that I've been catching up on back episodes. But she was on a recent episode and she said that she's never really had the imposter syndrome thing. Partly because when, you know, she is one of those people that just never really felt negatively about herself that much. She was, and she had always been, like, very confident. And so she was a bad kid. I think she said she was a bad kid. So she, for whatever reason, and she thinks that a lot of people who were bad kids are in the more, like, fringe areas of subcultures and things like that tend to be less likely to get things like the imposter syndrome.
Well, I went to an all-girls school.
Yep.
Yeah. And my group of friends were the odd kids, the ones that didn't really fit in. But we also were the ones that really didn't care. There were a subset of girls who really did care about the being popular and being that sort of person. Mm-hmm. And long as I had my group of friends, then I was fine. Mm-hmm. So I guess in that terms, I've never been unsure of who I am.
Right.
And I've always, I mean, I was like, you know, a kid is 10, 12, 13 writing. Mm-hmm. And that was who I was. So to me, it's an integral part of just who I see myself as.
Where, and I mean, I was writing from a very young age as well.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I think I wrote my first book when I was 3 or something. My father claims
that I wrote him a book when I was in like first or second grade or something like that.
I told a story to my babysitter, made her write it down and drew pictures about it. But then the first time I actually tried to sit down and write a story, I was probably about 7. I do have imposter syndrome. I do get it. Mm. And normally for me, but I am also one of those people that does not have a lot of self-confidence a lot of times. I have, you know, anxiety issues and stuff like that.
Am I a confident person, T?
I think it comes and goes. I mean, I think, because I know that you and I have had that conversation before where you just lean back and you just go, my God, this sucks. Why am I even doing this? And I know that I've had my points where I'm like, I can't finish anything. I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
And then I go, I'm going to get my frustration up by going downstairs and playing Destiny
for 4 hours.
Writers
all have their sticking points. Some people really get stuck in the writing block. I've never really If writing block happens, I know there's something wrong with it, and I have to be able to cope with it, and right. I know what to do with it.
Right.
Yeah. But for me, I think, and I'm in this situation right now, it's when I'm between projects and trying to get started on another project.
I love getting started.
No, I love getting sometimes started. It's that middle hump.
It's the middle bit.
Sometimes you know what? Once I get past the opening, I'm usually good.
Yeah.
And I think that's because early on I had so many problems with the openings of my books, and so much most of my feedback from agents and stuff like that was it takes too long to get started, the opening is too long, so I lost a lot of confidence in my ability to start a story, and I do tend to spin out backstory and context a little bit too much probably.
But I think for me part of the imposter syndrome sneaks in is that, and I know I've told Pip this before, I'm not as well read.
Right.
I mean, I have books. I have a lot of books, but most of the books I have are like, I've used snippets of books.
Mm-hmm.
I've got stuff highlighted in my research about pirates, and I got my stuff researched about Capone and all these different things. But as far as, you know, like reading a book from cover to cover, I'm a little limited in that. These past 2 months has been the most reading I have ever done in my life. And I'm not even reading it. It's in audiobook format,
right?
Which still counts. I know people say, "Oh, that still counts." And then the reason why I'm able to consume that many books in the audiobook is because DC traffic is crap.
Commute, yeah.
And it just dawned on me, I'm losing all this time. I might as well start listening to audiobooks. And it's been great. I've now fallen behind in my podcasting listening, but that's the trade-off. And I think now we get to now that we've identified all the different resources and all the different, origins of where this stuff comes from, the question is, how do we combat it? What do we say? What do we do that gets us over that hump?
For me, definitely the only I've said this before. The only thing that ever makes me feel better when I feel bad about my writing is working harder.
Yeah.
It's the only thing. So it's nose to grindstone. It's start doing research. It's, you know, look into things. It's edit something. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that ever helps me to combat that imposter syndrome is getting back to work.
And that is the only thing that
ever helps me.
When it comes to when I think for me, it's when I'm writing a scene and I don't have to stop. I don't have to stop and think about anything. I just start writing, and it just starts to flow. And when it starts to flow, I'll give you a perfect example. I was sweating bullets. I was absolutely sweating bullets when I was writing the Christmas special for the fifth season of Tales from the Archives.
Uh-huh.
I was really sweating it because I'm just like, I've got the idea in my head, but I don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to start. So I just said, okay, I'm going to do it tonight. I'm just going to get going. And Pip is like, Pip said to me, "What are you working on?" And I said, "I'm working on the short story for Tales from the Archives." She goes, "It sounds like it's writing itself." And I said, "I think it is." And then I started sweating it again because I'm just like, "Oh my God! Now I've got to produce it. Now I've got to produce it."
Mm-hmm.
And then we were driving down for our Christmas dinner. I played it in the car for Pip and Boom,
mm-hmm.
and they were laughing at all the right places. And I could hear Boom giggling in the back seat.
She's a big cat person.
So I knew she was going to be even more critical of it. And that was
but
when
it landed.
It landed. It stuck the landing. And that's when I was like, okay, I think I got this.
Mm-hmm.
And then with all the struggling of being sick and all the setbacks we had, I have jumped back into Operation Endgame. And that's another thing I think that that's when I feel that I get past the imposter syndrome as well, as you can see. The listeners can't see it, but our whiteboard here, when Pip and I come down here and we have the brainstorming
whiteboard
session, the whiteboard wall is nearly full, and there's still some space at the bottom just in case we need to go there. And for me, that also helps me get over the imposter syndrome, because like you said, it's working hard. It's also brainstorming, being able to get the ideas out and start to really flesh them out. Now, what about you? How do you go on ahead and combat this, Pip, if it ever happens to you?
You mean when I get stuck?
Yeah. Dude, is that when you look at me and go, "My writing sucks"? And I go, "No, it doesn't, darling."
No. As I think I've said before, if I get stuck, I know there's something wrong with it. So I have to go back and see where it starts sticking. And it's usually not at the the point where it peters out. It's usually a chapter or two back. Right. Something's not right. I'm not in the right point of view. I'm not doing the right scene. Something's mm-hmm. jamming up the works.
No, it's funny because I was working on a new property. Mm-hmm. I had gotten about 16,000 words into it when I got sick in November. And uh-huh. I've basically been, for those that don't know, I've been sick basically since November.
You're just coming out of it, really.
I'm just starting to climb
just
out of it.
Just in time for Smokey. Good
just
timing.
Just in time for just, Smokey.
That's
indeed.
Good timing right there.
It is very good timing. But
work!
But during the hiatus, I suppose, I started reading this this book. Oh, gosh. Hang on. What? Wired for Story.
I know the book.
By Lisa Kron.
I know that book.
I started reading that, and it just kind of made me go, oh, shiznit. And I realized that maybe my body had taken over and just said, you need to stop writing this right now because you're going to have to delete everything and start over.
So don't go too far.
So that may be what happened, because I recently did a lot more background work on my main character, on the villain, on the on the beginning of the story.
16's not so far into it that you have to burn the whole.
And I've never been shy about deleting words.
No, we know that about you.
You guys know that about me. I have rewritten books multiple times.
Or as you all like to say, old yellering.
I have old yellered.
Yeah. Your fair share.
Yeah.
My fair share of
and
work.
And then some.
Editing is a fine art.
Tackle and grapple.
You have to. Tackle and grapple it.
Uh-huh. So I old yellered the first 16,000 words of the project, and have been working on development and outlining and stuff so that I can restart it at Smokey. But a part of me inside is still saying, yeah, you're not going to be able to do it.
You're going to be fine.
Which is funny because, but that's the imposter syndrome
That is the little, I think that's the little imposter, syndrome.
The Napoleon syndrome.
I was thinking Napoleon myself. That's just part of the negativity that's in all writers' heads.
It's inherent in all creative,
I think. You can't do this. You can't finish it. Yeah. So, you know, you're a writer. Just write.
There we go.
Writers off the clock. So what do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't know.
No idea.
So we've been
still the greatest intro ever.
Ever.
How old is that? This is the oldest show.
That's one of the originals. That's one of the originals we came up with.
That's when we knew everything. We just knew how the show was going to go.
So as you can probably guess, because we've been between Lauren and myself doing our own drop-ins. This is what we want to talk about on tonight's Writers Off the Clock.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, you, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dang, I'm
so yeah.
Hamilton. That could be a writer's theme. I'm not gonna
Throw away my shot.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
or any creations really.
So Hamilton and American Musical. Now again, I'm sure there are probably listeners that are saying you're just getting around to that, or you're like, wow, that's so 2016.
Or they're like, Jesus Christ, I'm already sick of this.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
But you can't be sick of it because it's awesome. I mean, I never get sick of awesome stuff. Get sick of David Bowie.
No,
he's still awesome.
He's still releasing records too.
He's still releasing records.
But I mean,
he's still winning Grammys and he's dead.
I know. I mean, but when you get songs like this.
Raise a glass to Bowie.
This is actually my favorite song in the whole thing, because I remember hearing this.
I do.
Yeah, and apparently when you listen to Hamilton with Lauren,
you have to.
Lauren sings along.
I do. Boy, you got me helpless.
I mean, that's a great.
I
look into your eyes. It's beautiful. And the sky's the limit. I'm
helpless. I mean,
not if you've got an AK-47, but okay.
Exactly. But I mean,
Eliza had an AK-47.
She did. I'm sure she did.
You could carry some significant guns
underneath those skirts. But so, okay, so what we decided to talk about with Hamilton and American Musical is, first off, one, why we all resisted the bandwagon that was Hamilton, and then what exactly broke...
The ham wagon.
The ham wagon, and what was it that broke us? What was it that actually brought us on board?
See, my problem is, T, from being at the all-girls school, I was always the rebellious one. So people were liking Duran Duran, and I was like, I'm not listening to Duran Duran. I'm listening to Bowie and the Clash.
Listening to Bowie and the Clash.
And then I'm going to listen to Metallica. So anything that's sort of, you know, new and hip, I'm like...
I just want to say...
You're automatically resistant.
You're over-modulating like you wouldn't believe in this show.
Bowie.
But that's because you're screaming in the mic. Yeah. That's a studio condenser mic, by the way. I know a thing or two about that. Anyway, podcasting
for
dummies.
Wait, I'm doing the thing.
There you go. Do the thing.
For those that don't know, you...
You do the hang loose.
You do the hang loose.
No, you do that. You throw the goat.
Okay, so you either hang loose or if you're Pip and are resistant to things, then you do the goat. You throw the goat and you put your thumb against your chin and your pinky against the mic. I mean, I guess you could also rock the shocker.
Yeah, you can rock the shocker. Okay, so Pip, you were saying that you went against the grain.
You just didn't want to. Rebel. Tonya, dress. Rebel, your face is a mess.
Your face is a mess.
You've drunken too much Vikings blood.
No, there's no such thing. No such thing. Here, pour me. I'm not throwing away my shot.
No, give me your shot and I'll throw it down your
throat. So now, how about you, Lauren? How about you? What was your? Why were you so resistant of?
I am an obsessive personality. I know this about myself.
The deuce you said.
It's good to know that you know that.
Own it.
Everyone who's close to me knows this, especially my roommate.
Ah.
So if I start talking about something, oftentimes my books and what I'm working on, I will follow her. Mm-hmm. She will be cleaning. I will be following her around. I won't realize where I'm standing or if I'm wearing pants. I will be talking to her about things that she may or may not care about.
But you're talking to her.
But I'm talking to her. She will go to the bathroom and start peeing, and I will stand in the doorway, not respecting her privacy at all. And we've known each other since we were 12, so you know it's 20 years as of this year.
Everyone, here's a brief look into moments like that. This is well, we actually got Scribby on recording, and it sounds something like this.
Has the whole world gone crazy?
That's exactly what it is.
She's very tolerant, also a Hufflepuff.
Yes.
Yeah, you could tell from that. No other house would put up with that.
So with that obsessive personality.
That obsessive personality, I knew that this was, because Katie had been trying to get me into it, and then Abby tried to get me into it, and I'm sitting here going, no, I can't, and I was being resistant to it, and a lot of times I get resistant in the same way Pip does to things I know I will like.
Right.
And I do that as a method of protecting myself when I am working on things.
Right.
I was trying to finish a book. I was trying to finish Song of the Heretic, and I was trying to finish what is used to be titled Hellhound, is now titled Unleash.
Right.
And I had stuff to do.
Right.
You didn't want to drown in Hamilton.
I knew that as soon as I got... I already have obsessions that are still with me today from when I was 9.
Yeah, yeah.
So things that I still
go
back and check.
You want to be careful how many more you add.
Exactly.
I need to be careful of that kind of thing because they will also come and go in waves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I knew that this was going to be something...
That was going to get you.
That was going to get me. This is 7 feet in front of me. When's it going to get me? So, basically, I imagine Hamilton obsession almost like it's a memory.
Well, it's already in people around you, but so it's close.
So what eventually broke me...
No, we're not getting there yet.
Oh, we're not getting there yet?
Not yet.
So how about you,
Why did you
how
resist?
About
you?
So for me, the part of the resist is because... It's sort of something that I kind of kept at arm's length. It's the actor in me. I mean, the actor in me absolutely loves musical theater, and I obsessed over Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm.
I obsessed over Les Miserables. Mm-hmm. I've seen Phantom on stage. I've seen Les Mis on stage.
Is it because you can't be in it?
There's that. Mm-hmm. There's also the one of I can't be in it because I can't find it anywhere. Specifically, I'm talking about the British edition, not the American edition, but the British edition of Chess, which is a fabulous musical, and mm-hmm. I absolutely adore it. Then there's another musical that I know I will never be able to see, and it won a Tony, and yet it flopped on Broadway. It was a musical adaptation of the film My Favorite Year, but instead of Peter O'Toole playing Lyle Swan, the swashbuckling mm-hmm. actor, it was Tim effing Curry.
Oh.
And the music in there was absolutely fabulous. There's a piece in there called Naked in Bethesda Fountain. And Andrea Martin from SCTV has one line in that, and it's just her singing in the background, Naked in Bethesda Fountain, the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I would listen to this stuff nonstop. The problem is when I'm working on a book, most of the time I need to listen to stuff that has no lyrics.
Yep, same.
Because if I start listening to lyrics,
so soundtracks.
Yeah, that's why I listen to so many soundtracks and things like that. Now, when people are telling, oh, T, you would you're an actor. You would love Hamilton. You would love Hamilton. I go, I know I would love Hamilton. That's why I'm not listening to it, because then I'm going to obsess over this.
So you two are pretty much the same.
It's closer, but instead of the obsessive personality, for me, it's the actor mm-hmm. who has to learn all the lines and then start mm-hmm. singing along, which I'm already getting into with Hamilton.
I think we know what we're going to be listening to on the way to Fairpoint.
Yep. Oh, wait, hang on a minute. Hang on.
Inappropriate.
No, that's not.
Inappropriate.
It's all.
Yep. It's appropriate.
It's appropriate. It's, oh, we're going to listen to more Hamilton?
Can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah!
Now, so what broke us? Pip, what broke you?
Katie. Katie Brisky. Katie and I have a thing. The thing is that we go to presidential places. Like, uh-huh. we've been to Mount Vernon and we've been
the hell it is you do in Monticello.
That's right. We went to Monticello. We mm-hmm. went to Montpellier.
Montpellier.
Mm-hmm. And as we were coming back from Montpellier, Katie made me listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started to sing. And then it was over, Red Rover.
So, no, but what was the song that tipped you over, though?
I really did like Helpless. I like a good
song.
Lady song. And I thought it was really cool how they... What was the rewind? The rewind.
That's...
That's not Helpless. That's Satisfied.
Satisfied. Yeah, Satisfied.
I like that.
That's
I thought
one.
It was beautiful.
And the way it's done where they rewind it. I mean, that's just ingenious. That's so real.
Yes, Katie was like, you got to hear it. You got to hear it.
Yeah.
Here they go.
Yeah. Now, how about you? What was your breaking point, Lauren?
Scribby. Yeah. So Scribby and Katie have a similar obsession with Hamilton. And it's... funny because Scribby doesn't really get into musicals that much. She has them, she likes them, but Scribby's not obsessive
mm-hmm.
in the same way that I am. She's a media consumer, like, whoa. But she's
that's why you and Scribby
get along.
We hicked off so well, yeah.
But she doesn't really get things that she'll find something that's comfortable and she'll stay with it for a long, long time. Like the Mercy Thompson books, she re-listens to those audiobooks over and over and over and over again, not necessarily out of obsession, but out of comfort because she doesn't have the energy to branch out at that point.
Right. Right.
She knows she'll be entertained by them. She was kind of low-key trying to get me into Hamilton. But she understood why I was being resistant, and she's known me long enough to know what she would be bringing on herself and others.
But she did it anyway.
So what happened was we were unpacking, because we moved in October, and then a month and a half later I got horribly sick. And so around January... we were still unpacking stuff and putting together bookshelves and putting together her
IKEA stuff.
And it was around then. I hadn't gotten out of bed yet, and she had it playing, and she had it on shuffle. Scribby has a bad habit of showing me things and introducing me things by playing me her favorite episodes of shows not showing me
what
things in order.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And she was trying to not tell me it was Hamilton.
That sounds like Lin-Manuel. No.
And make me listen to it. So I got out. I was defenseless. I hadn't had coffee.
Oh,
I couldn't.
Defenseless. She got you.
I couldn't say.
I didn't have my coffee
no.
and didn't just okay. say no to this.
But the song that got me was What Did I Miss?
Oh, What I Missed.
See, I also had the impression that most of it was rap.
Ah, yeah.
So I knew, I thought it was going to be really fast and hard to understand for most of the play.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I was going to need to sit down and actually listen really hard and give it a lot of attention. But I kind of looked up at one point and I went, is this Hamilton? Because he's...
Are you sneaking Hamilton?
He's Thomas Jefferson. She looked up at me with this... No, I don't know what you're talking about. She kind of was like, yes.
There's a lot of Thomas Jefferson stuff written.
And then I was just like, fine, start at the beginning. And so,
it's a trap.
It's a trap.
So we went all the way to the beginning of the musical. Mm. And that in one day, I took it to the face.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was explaining what was going on throughout a lot of it.
Yep,
and,
yep.
Replaying songs 6 times in a row when I asked her to, because I did ask her to. And now I'm almost done listening to the audio version of Ron Chernow's Alexander Hamilton biography, and I know a shit ton about Alexander Hamilton.
You're deep.
Yeah, you're balls deep.
Yeah, yeah.
Balls deep. Yeah.
So, also, also, I have Lin-Manuel Miranda on... his own special stream with Maureen Johnson and J.K. Rowling on Hootsuite.
Ooh.
Nicely done.
So, That's fun. A lot of it's fun because he and Maureen Johnson, who is a prominent YA author and basically the queen of Twitter, they know each other. And so they go back and forth. I don't know if they knew each other before. I don't think they know each other well. But they're kind of mutual fangirls. So, like, her birthday was the other day, and she's in Jamaica, and she took a picture of herself with a cannon, and she said, let's steal their cannons, and tweeted at him, and he just said, happy birthday, I got you a cannon. And, like, they'll go back and forth with each other, and he's currently in London.
I might have to track his Twitter feed.
Oh, right. His Twitter feed is hilarious, because he's making mixtapes for people, like, yeah. Actual, he calls himself Old Man Miranda.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of a Luddite. And
he's been in revolutionary America for a while.
Well, and he doesn't do social media that much, and so he's like, Old Man Miranda needs help setting up a Spotify playlist.
That's brilliant.
And
I love it when I see
people help him out.
I love it. So I can tell you the exact moment.
But he also talks to his fans. They ask him questions about creativity
and
being creative and getting over blocks and doing things like that.
Yeah, he does seem like a good
guy. He'll do,
as long as I got a job, I got a job. As long as I got a job, you got a job.
But yeah, but he talks real talk about, like, you know, what do you do when you are out of inspiration? This is what you do.
He seems like a genuinely, because there's that moment when the guy who runs Drunk History, when he turns to people and he goes, so you ready to get drunk? And he used to go, yeah, let's go. You know, it's just like that. Lin-Manuel Miranda was the first guy on the show to actually go, yes!
Yes!
His eyes got huge.
And let's get drunk.
And he grabbed him by the arm, too. He was like, yes.
Let's get this going.
Let's do it. I like the part at the end. They're eating, like, chili fries or something like that.
Yeah,
He's sitting there, and the guy that runs My Drunk History is kind of leaning on him and reaching across him to get the fries. And then my mom Miranda looks at him and goes, what do I have to do to get this part?
So
your fries.
So the breaking point for me, I can tell you exactly when it happened.
You watched My Drunk History?
Nope. It's this right here.
Sneaked into the South Pacific back door.
Yep.
It came at you Maori style.
It came at me. What is the language here?
It's Tokelauan, I think.
Tokelauan. Mm. But yeah, the minute when I heard when this drum beat kicked in, I'm sitting in the theater and I'm watching what had so far, and this is before The Rock even showed up. And I hear this. And I know this isn't the part with Lin-Manuel Miranda, that's coming up. But I remember sitting in the theater and I'm going, wow, this is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. And if you haven't figured it out yet, this is the soundtrack to Moana, and I'm just watching all this stuff on the screen. I'm getting chills just talking about it, and I was like, okay, this is really cool. Then I heard this.
That's Lin.
I can't talk. I gotta listen to this.
I saw a really great picture of him with the New Zealander who wrote the song.
Yeah. And
we know who we are. Away, away.
Are you sure he hasn't got some Polynesian in him? Because he sounds great with the...
I know.
We grow.
be a Hawaiian?
When I heard this song, I remember sitting in the theater thinking...
He is Puerto Rican. He's from an island.
I remember sitting there thinking to myself, I've got to listen to Hamilton now. And I'm just like, God damn it, I got to listen to Hamilton
Well,
now.
When Sonic Boom had Hamilton before us.
Well, no, that was the weird thing, too.
She was streaming it.
She was streaming it.
Yeah. But all the kids at school know Hamilton.
Oh, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that. It wasn't school. It was Stratemann.
That's right.
She came back from Stratemann, and then one day I'm walking by, and I hear this, I am Alexander Hamilton. And I'm like,
what?
I'm like, are you listening to Hamilton? She's like, oh, yeah, this is great, Dad. I was like, no. But when I heard We Know the Way, mm-hmm. I was done. I was like, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to listen to Hamilton. And I kept putting it off. Yep. And I kept putting it off. And then Katie, you know, we were listening to this, and Katie was like, so you really like Moana?
She got us.
Do you want to listen to something else? And then I can hear,
do you want to listen to something else?
Yeah. You are going to listen to something else.
And then she threw in that little charm, like, you're going to really like this, eh? And I'm like, it's going to be Hamilton. And but it was Moana that pushed me over the edge. Yeah. And I still give Katie credit.
It's actually funny. Now I say it was the Jefferson song that tipped me over. I actually remember the one before that tipped me. The Jefferson song was like, okay, I'll listen to it. The one that actually, where I actually settled in and went, I'm listening to this entire damn thing, and I'm going to love it, is the song, the King George song.
Oh, yes.
Which one? He had so many good ones in there, but
Well, it's the same song with slightly different lyrics.
Was it?
It's the first one. Yes.
This one.
Yes.
Yeah. You'll be back.
You'll be back.
Yeah.
Well, there's You'll Be Back, What Comes Next, and... The price of my love's not a price that you're willing to pay.
Now,
It could still happen. We could still be back.
And here's a beautiful thing. So, the Howards, Ben Howard and Megan Howard, they took their kids to New York, and they got tickets to Hamilton. Then they stuck around, like, around the stage door. They met King George.
Jonathan Groff?
Yeah.
King George III, the first, King George III, the second, King George III, the third, the fourth, or the third, the fifth?
One of the King Georges. They met one of the Georges, and they met a couple of the cast members, and it seems like the cast members of Hamilton, they've done some cool things.
They do Ham for Ham.
They did, they made that incredible speech to now Vice President Pence. Mm-hmm. They did that wonderful tribute to Prince when they all started breaking down, and I saw both the audience view, and then one of the backstage hands did an Instagram video of it, and it was really cool watching the two of them together. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can tell they're a very tight cast, and the fact that they're doing all this on a minimal stage, I mean, that's even better.
Well, and that's the thing, is that Hamilton is supposed to exist on its words. On what it says and on the power of the acting.
Right.
So it couldn't have a big set because it had too much to say. And I think that's the interesting thing. It's like the Shakespeare theater that if you've ever seen, what's the company that did the Shenandoah Shakespeare Express?
Oh, yeah, I know the Shenandoah Shakespeare Express. Yeah, they're great people.
I figured you would know that. But they did a version of Taming of the Shrew that went to video that is just a classic that I've watched over and over. But it had that same kind of minimal stage. And when you get something with words like that can be carried on the power of its acting and its delivery and its message alone...
Well,
a lot of that, I think, is some of the most powerful.
You know, actor that actually did that, William Shakespeare, the first time he, produced on the stage. They didn't have a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a lot of set if you've got great words.
Just a quick shout out to the Shenandoah Shakespeare Express, now
American
Shakespeare Theater in beautiful Stanton, Virginia.
Got to go back there.
Founded by JMU alumni. I'm just saying.
After this much blood, I feel kind of upset.
Raise a glass to writing.
They're going to hear the podcast of tonight.
They'll hear the podcast of tonight.
I still got it.
See, there might be another reason why you won't be in Hamilton.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
I remain silent.
You're too white. You're too white.
Oh, I know I'm too white. That's the other thing.
You could play George.
I could, you know, I could do the yeah, da, 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 da. Yeah, I could do that. have to warm up the vocal cords a bit and not drink so much blood. Okay, so.
It's okay. I would be happy to dance behind Leslie Autumn Jr.
Oh.
Just saying.
Any of them. You know what? I would be more than happy to be the backup man for Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You could be the redhead dude that's like, you know, the best thing George Washington to do for America is go back to planting tobacco in Mount Vernon. <It's>
And you're a Virginia boy.
I'm a Virginia boy. I could get behind that. Okay, so
Hamilton is not good to the Virginians.
So by the time
these Virginians are birds of a feather.
Yeah.
Son, I'm Virginian. You watch your mouth.
George was in Virginia.
George. Yeah. Anyway,
Georgia, Virginia.
Georgia, Virginia. Watch out for that war. Okay, so after.
No, watch out for that cherry tree.
Watch out for that cherry tree. God. And this is what happened.
I need more blood.
You're going to.
I can't have less, so I must have more.
Yeah, you're gonna. This is what happens. This is what happens when blood is involved. So by the time this drops, Farpoint will have come and gone. But there are other events that are coming up. What events do we have coming up, Pip? Do you know what we've got coming up in April? I can tell you.
We've got RavenCon.
You can find out more about RavenCon. Oh dear. Oh
the
dear.
The blood
that's,
is gone.
That's just pathetic.
The blood that's is just gone. Pathetic.
I was expecting you to be like just kind of nurse that like a teat.
No, it's gone. It's gone. I'm glad we brought two bottles.
This is when I wish it was a video podcast. Okay.
This is when I'm glad it's not.
Yeah. So we got RavenCon.
Okay because I already poured myself a shot.
She's going to pour herself a shot. And then in May, although some people are expecting us to be at Balticon, we will not be because we have a book.
We got sick. We had 2 months of not doing nothing.
And the other thing is we really want to make sure since Operation Endgame is the last of Books and Bronze Adventures.
Wink, 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 for now.
We want to make sure it's right. So yeah. we're gonna be sitting out. Balticon.
But feel free to come back and.
That's okay. I will keep the Canadian to myself.
Please, you do. And then
I'm gonna go to Williamsburg with the Canadian. What do you think of that?
Fine.
Oh yeah, fine. So yeah, pretty much.
You're gonna go to Williamsburg
after
with two Canadians.
That's
Farpoint,
right.
We got RavenCon. That's about it. So since everyone else is talking over me, Lauren, where are you going?
Well, I will be at Balticon.
Good on you.
Yeah.
There will be and no blood there because we got the blood.
Let's see. I will also be going on the Writing Excuses cruise.
Oh, nice. That's right. You and Scribby.
Where does that take
Baltic
off from?
Sea. It embarks and debarks in Kiel, Germany.
Ooh.
So we thought it was going to debark in Helsinki and be there and go to Worldcon.
Yeah.
So we were going to do that, but then once we actually got the information about the cruise.
Yeah.
It looks like it debarks in Kiel, Germany, and there would be quite a ways to travel to get to Helsinki from there.
Helsinki's a bit of a
distance. Hang on a second.
So we decided instead of going to Worldcon after the Writing Excuses cruise, Scribby and I are going to go to Amsterdam and Prague and possibly meet up with a certain Bavarian.
Hang on a minute.
That you've rubbed boobies with?
Hang on a minute.
I have rubbed boobies
Are you talking about...
Hot Topic!
I am. Wait,
no, you mean to tell me we're going to have a
Hot Topic
reunion?
We may.
Oh my God. I have
pinged her and my other Bavarian friend and just said, hey, we're going to be there around this time of year. I don't have any specific things yet, but both of them. But Verena was the first one to jump back on and go, oh my God, you're going to be there? You're going to be in Germany? So hopefully.
Well, they've got those very fast trains there, so and, that she could jump on and be there in half an hour.
Well, and the thing is, Scribby actually speaks some German.
Oh, no.
Very nice.
So she took
very
German
nice.
in high school. Her sister, her twin sister, is fluent in German and Spanish because she's one of those people
I just
people
hope it's
that
not like when I was in Paris and I got out my French And then they were like, no, this is all right. We speak English.
Well, the funny thing was, I've been to
Stop
Germany.
Killing our language, you bitch.
I've been to Germany before.
Yeah.
And I had been sort of led to believe that, you know, most Europeans spoke both their language and English because they were more cultured and educated than anyone over here.
But
there were a surprising number of people that did not speak English in tourist areas.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
And so
the good news is we all know Verena knows her English.
Yes.
Oh, well, first of all, I'm not Lauren, so I'm absolutely in love with her boobs.
I wish I could be there for that reunion. Man, we got to get the band back together real soon. Ah, so that's very cool. Oh, that's gonna be a great trip.
That will be fun.
What month there'll is be that? Lots
of, but and I will also get to see Piper and
yes.
Matt.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
On the cruise, so that
so
would be great.
So you, Piper, Matt, and Scribby on a cruise in Europe. There's no way this could end badly. All right. So
we'll
why
just
don't
be watching the news.
Yeah. So actually then let's just go ahead and wrap this up. If you got any comments for Scribe or for Pip or me about the imposter syndrome, about any of the things we talked about Hamilton, about blood, remember it's 703-791-1701, the voicemail. We love hearing from you. And then of course you can drop me an email at t@tmorris.com or
Pip at pjballantine.com.
And if you want to just talk to Lauren and not us, you can always talk to Lauren at...
My Twitter, which is Mark's Master.
Aha.
But you also have a website.
I do have a website. It is www.laurenbharris.com. So I was about to give out my email address, but it's private.
Oh, okay. Well, then
there
you
also
go.
Really hard to spell.
Okay.
Then leave it alone.
Twitters and so the face.
And occasionally the Instagrams.
And occasionally the Instagrams when I'm not being a dope.
There you go. Fair enough. So just remember, everybody, and oh boy, I've had blood, so let's see if I can pull this out. The Shared Desk is protected by a non-commercial, no derivative, share-alike 3.0 United States license, and you can find out more about that license at creativecommons.org.
Yeah.
You know, Katie and I have to say the unported license because we are an international podcast.
Yeah, there you go. But make sure you listen to that podcast. The links are in the shows, and we've already plugged that, so we're always happy to hear from Words of a Feather. Speaking of podcasts, I do have some news about podcasts in general, but I can't talk about it now, but maybe by the next podcast,
things
I'll be able
be
to sit down
up.
And we will be able to talk about that. But until that time, thanks for listening, as always. Enjoy the ride.
We'll catch you later.
Bye.
Blood.
Don't say no.
Say no to this. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on a minute.
Let's play a little bit. You know.
Where is it? Yeah, I know. There's Nonstop. Where is it?
It's called the Reynolds pamphlet.
No, it's this one. This one right here.
Oh, the Reynolds pamphlet's when everyone's when everyone finds out.
There's nothing
like summer in the city. Someone under stress meets someone looking pretty.
There's trouble in the air, you can smell it. And Alexander's by himself. I'll let him tell.
I hadn't slept in a week.
I was weak.
I was awake. You've never seen a bastard orphan more in need of a break. Longing for Angelica.
I love that.
That's when
I love
Miss Mariah Reynolds walked into my life, she said.
The rhythm.
I know you are a man of honor. I'm so sorry to bother you.
It's got a Barry White kind of feel for obvious reasons. It's got that Barry White feel to it.
She has a fantastic voice. You know, she and the guy who plays John Lawrence and Philip are the two youngest in the cast, and they're dating. Mistreating
me. All right. We're waiting for the hook.
Have the means to go on.
So I offered her a loan. I offered to walk her home, she said.
You're too kind, sir.
I gave her $30 that I had socked away. She lived a block away, she said.
This one's mine, sir.
Then I said, well, I should head back home. She turned red. She led me to a bed, let her legs spread and said,
stay.
Hey. That's when I began to pray, Lord, show me how to say no to this. I don't know how to say no to this. Oh my God, she looks so helpless.
And my body's saying helpless.
Yes. I don't know how to say no to this. I don't know how to say no to this. In my mind, I'm trying to go. Then her mouth is on mine.
And
I don't
say no.
Say no to this.
No.
Say no to this.
No.
That was the last time.
Okay. So we have to go upstairs, and I am going to pull up the spot.